You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
The Ensemble List is brought to you in part by our Patreon members, including Phoebe Stewart, Christian Ranke, Kat Hicks, Stephen Bell, Patrick Brady, Emily Klen, Cheryl Hodges-Seldon, Ty Williams, Christopher Gurr, Joey Soji, Linda Lee, and Cullen Elijah. You can join them in supporting The Ensemblist for as little as $5 a month. Find out how at patreon.com/theensemblist.
You're listening to The Ensemblist, the only podcast that shows you Broadway from the inside out. I'm Jackson Klein. In October 2017, The Ensemblist launched its fourth full season, Broadway at Every Stage. In this series, co-creators Mo Brady and Nika Graf Lanzaroni sat down with six seasoned Broadway actors to dive into their decades-long careers. They discussed getting started in theater, the ups and downs of show business, and the longevity of their careers. Over the next 6 weeks, we'll be sharing some of the best moments from this series. First up is Adina Alexander. Adina made her Broadway debut in Parade in 1998, 2 decades after moving to New York City. She's since performed in the original casts of Urban Cowboy, Wicked, The Wedding Singer, and most recently, Kinky Boots. From piano bars to off-Broadway's The No Frills Revue, from mega flops to mega hits, Adina told us all about her extraordinary career. Here's our conversation.
From a man like me, I'm a reflection, her protection, I'm her curiosity.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, I'm Adina Alexander, and I live in Hell's Kitchen. I graduated from SUNY Binghamton in 1978, and I had a degree in theater, which was basically useless. And honestly, I walked out of that school. I didn't even know what backstage was. So I just found my way. And at the time, there was no non-union work. You had to be in the union. Now, if I was advising somebody, I'd say, wait, because there's so much non-union work. But if you weren't in a 212 area code and you weren't in the union, you didn't exist. At the time, you could buy your way into the union. So my parent union was SAG because I did extra work on a movie. And that got me into the union. And there were no such thing as EPAs. In fact, I've never even been to an EPA. I had a group of friends and we would get together at the Applejack Diner at like 4 a.m. and then go sign up on like a long yellow form in a hallway somewhere and just pray that our names would get taken. So that's actually how I got the No Frills Revue. Random story, when I was auditioning for the No Frills Revue, I was working in a piano bar. And I walked into the room on the last day of the callbacks and I said, oh, I see a stool over there. Can I sit on the stool? So feel free to smoke and drink while I sit on the stool and sing my song for you. And it turns out that the opening number was called Stools. And you can't do a revue without stools. So I just happened to randomly just talk my way into the job. Martin Charnin, he auditioned tons and tons and tons of people and it got down to 10 people. It was sketch comedy reviews, and we did What If Somebody Else Wrote Very Famous Musicals. If Stephen Sondheim had written Annie, so it was like, attend the tale of an orphan girl, her eyes were O's and her hair did curl. And then I was with Justin Ross, we were If Noel Coward Had Written Fiddler. And it was Tevye, darling, you know, and Sasha Charnin was in it, Bob Stillman, Justin Ross, Sarah Knapp. And out of that, I got my agent, who was my agent for 22 years. During the No Frills Revue, it was a short show. I would get on the subway, go up to Brandy's, work until 4 o'clock in the morning, do 2 shows on Saturday, 2 shows on Sunday, and then work till 4 o'clock in the morning that night. But I was young. I remember my first big paycheck was $262.50 a week. But the thing is, I paid $125 a month for my apartment on 11th and University. So it was a really different time. I was lucky enough to have some friends who were Broadway people who said, just say yes to whoever says, will you come and do this thing for me? It was before readings were a thing. You know, will you come and do this showcase? You know, just say yes, because you're going to develop a network of people. It was great advice for me because I was able to say yes to so many things. And out of that, made so many connections with people who were just starting out, like Stephen Remus. And how many years later we ran into each other again. And that's how Wicked came to be. Also, when I first started out, somebody recommended me to be a chick singer in a band, which turned out to be really great for my career because I literally walked into somebody's living room, sang a couple songs. 3 days later, I was learning 60 songs in the car going up to the Concord to sing with the band for the first time in my life. And then I went on the road for like 2 years with a band. It was the 80s. I had a bleach blonde mullet and I wore a lot of spandex and I learned how to sing pop, which I think has given me the career that I've had as an aging actress. You know, I played Janis Joplin off Broadway and I've done a lot of rock and pop stuff that came out of learning how to sing like that. And then when I came back, I thought, okay, I don't know if I really want to do this. So I got a regular job. And then one day I just thought, I've never really given it a serious shot. I did a rock and roll science fiction musical called Rock Bound. I just fell into working. So I've never been out of work, except for like 1 7-month period when I didn't know what was coming next. But I was always doing something. And in between, I was singing and working in the piano bar.
What a man.
What a woman.
What a man.
What a
woman.
What a man.
What a
man.
What a
woman.
Search for signs of intelligent life in the universe. I had to come up with 6 characters. I end up booking this job, and actually Kathy Fitzgerald has done it also. So she said, this will be the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life, but you will learn more about yourself from anything. And it was very true. You're on stage for almost 3 hours just by yourself, not a prop, nothing. And you play like 17 different characters. So it was an incredible, exhausting experience. So one day I start as the bag lady and I'm walking onto the stage and I'm talking, I'm mumbling to myself. And the usher goes, excuse me, sir, you can't go up there. And I'm just talking. And he goes like, sir, you can't go on stage. And I'm thinking, wow, the usher doesn't even know that I'm me. This is fabulous. I've really transformed myself. Whistle Down the Wind was the pre-Broadway tryout, so it was supposed to be my Broadway debut. Ironically, I also booked to be Nell Carter's cover in Annie. So I chose the new Andrew Lloyd Webber Hal Prince musical because I thought, well, this is just going to be a shoo-in. And so I gave up Annie. And then the night that we closed, they brought us all out on stage and they told us we weren't going. And by the time I left that theater, I was drunk and I went up to the producer and I said, I could have been in Annie. The next morning was Dave Clemens and Tim Shue and all these people. We got on the bus and they had made gin and tonics for everybody. We got into the city. We went right by. It was the Hirschfeld, but it was the Martin Beck then. And the plastics were already up for Whistle Down the Wind. And we were like screaming out the window and Whistle Down the Drain and whatever. So that was supposed to be my first Broadway show. I wrote a letter to Hal Prince and I told him that instead of going to my high school prom, I had gone to see Candide in 1974 and that it was a dream to work with him. And even though I didn't make my debut with him, it was such a dream. And he wrote me back. He said, don't worry, I'm doing a new show. It's called Parade and you're going to be in it. Was an incredible experience since I was part of that process for like 4.5 years. And we went to Toronto and then Broadway and then I did the tour. Hal, he's just the most elegant, wonderful man you'd ever want to work with. He's a great storyteller and a man of his word. When he announced on the Tonys that they were doing the tour, I had gone on as Mrs. Fagan without rehearsal and Jessica Malasky had to go on for Carol Lee, like the Tuesday after we opened. I wrote him a letter and I said, you're doing the tour and I want to play Mrs. Fagan. He wrote me back and said, okay, that was it. I'd never been in an ensemble in my life until I got Whistle Down the Wind. And I looked around and I saw an ensemble of people who'd created roles I've admired my whole life. I mean, Hal put together an ensemble of principal actors. And I was 40 when I got my first Broadway show. I said, never say never to anything because you don't ever know what it's going to bring. The Parade process was really personal and really beautiful and very emotional for everybody and just really proud to be a part of a show like that. And I think it was ahead of its time in a lot of ways. It was so dark. It felt important.
Look at you, divinely dull, drab, and dumpy.
2003, I ended up being on the worst top 10 list and the best top 10 list in the same season because I did Urban Cowboy. They'd auditioned me several times and I didn't get it. And I was supposed to go off and do another production of Dirty Blonde. And my agent called and said, they want to see you again for Urban Cowboy. So I went in and I just thought to myself, what didn't I do last time? So I sang something completely different and then I booked it and then I had to pay to get out of the other contract. Urban Cowboy was a blast. I mean, it was the sexiest, craziest, most fun company. It was just incredible. And I stood by for two of the principal roles, but it just tanked. And we were supposed to close the day after we opened. So I thought, well, I'm never going to get on stage. So I used to dress a lot like a cowgirl. So I walked on stage at all the Gillies scenes with a real bottle of tequila in my hand. They kept it going for 2 months. I think sometimes the worst shows are the things that you bond together the most over. And it was just a great, great group of people, some of whom I'm still close friends with. That closed and Wicked happened. Wicked was like the polar opposite. Wicked was like being a rock star. It was insane. I mean, phone calls from people. I don't know if you remember me. We went to kindergarten together. I had to keep a file on my dressing table of who wants house seats when. Even have an audition for Wicked, and I was supposed to go do something else. And I just walked up to Mr. Telsey and I said, by the way, Stephen Remus knows my voice really well. And I also knew Joe Mantello back when he was an actor and we were hanging out on Montauk. So he knew me, and I just thought, I'm going to get this. And I just said, you know, Stephen Remus knows my voice really well. And they said, okay. And that was it. I was the original swing on Wicked, and I think I was 49 at the time, and I'd never swung a show in my life. They said, well, you're going to do Madame Marble, and you'll do The Midwife. So the first day I'm learning all these dancing tracks, and I go, I was crying, like, why am I, I can't do this. And then I just thought, you know what? I'm going to be the best swing that there ever was. It's the hardest job on Broadway to be a good swing, and I'm going to do it. And so by the end, when I left, I was there for like 2 years, I knew every track, plus I went on for Marble hundreds of times. I took over as the midwife for a nice chunk of time. And it was kind of funny because nobody knew me. Nobody knew my work. The first time I went on as Marble, literally on stage in the middle of a scene, Kristen Chenoweth turns to me and she goes, you're so good. And I said, I know. And I went home that night and somebody said, how was it? I said, well, now they know what everybody who's ever worked with me in my life knows. This was my comfort zone. The first thing I ever did in Wicked was a 30-second ballroom crossover in someone else's dress because they didn't have my costumes yet. I didn't know anybody in the costumes and the lights, and it was terrifying. They said, you're the swing, but really you're just here to play Marble. I mean, I was older than anybody else, so I didn't do any of the shiz stuff. I didn't do any of these students' things. And when I left, they changed the whole track around. Shen Shen, they made that the Marble cover, and they hired a really young person to be the swing, to do all the other stuff. So I feel like I gave tons of women work because I could have stayed there forever. I could still be there now. But I was young enough to think that my working Broadway show to Broadway show would just go on forever. So I went to another Broadway show, which was The Wedding Singer. And then when that closed, it took me almost 10 years to get back. I turned 50 on the stage of the Hirschfeld Theater dancing in a fat suit. And then I turned 60 last year on the Hirschfeld stage doing Kinky Boots. In the interim, I did some incredible things. I did Adding Machine for David Cromer, which was my favorite show that I've ever done in my career. I did a lot of regional stuff. I did an off-Broadway play. You know, I did a lot of different things. And I was always working, but I didn't get another Broadway show until Kinky Boots. That came about because Stephen Remus called me up and he said, oh, I'm doing this thing with Cyndi Lauper. Do you want to do it? I said, sure. So it was a reading and I was originally playing Trish and Jen Perry was playing Pat. I was doing a White Christmas tour and I'd supposed to go out on tour again. And I called my agent. I said, get out of it. This show is going to be so huge. I just know it. I felt it in my gut. It had so much good in it. My whole career has been basically new musicals. So I've watched a lot of things crash and burn because the writers or the director can't let go of material that doesn't work. I knew the way Jerry was in rehearsal, that he had the greatest eye and ear. And everything was just constantly getting better and better and better. And it already had its main lead producers in place. I knew that first day that it was going to be something really, really special. And so I said, I want to be available for all of it. The audiences for Kinky Boots were always with us. There was never a show, a preview, anything in Chicago, even as it continued to change and grow and hone in, never a show that didn't get a standing ovation, ever. I think the genius of Jerry was that he tapped into something that moved people and changed people's point of view, but also related to them. He took the movie and he made it so relatable in terms of the relationship between fathers and sons and being yourself. It's always resonated with the audience. And that changed after the election It felt more important to get the message out. You could feel people even responding more to it. The box office got calls from people saying, I need to see this again. I need to be reminded that there is hope and good and change is possible. You could see like burly men in the front row, like frowns on their faces in the beginning. And when they sing, I'm not my father's son, tears. Because everybody has that thing of like, I couldn't be the person my father, mother, whatever wanted me to be. And when the character of Don is the one that makes the change, it moves everyone. It's like family. You know, everybody throws that around a lot. Broadway's a family. But this show, it's true. Some of us have been doing it since the first reading like 6.5, 7 years ago, and we're still there. And every night, it's fun because we laugh. I just wanted to be at the party. I literally said to Jerry, you know, because I had a character named Mrs. Cobb that was cut when we were in Chicago, and he put his hands on my shoulders and he said, Mrs. Cobb has to go. And I said, listen, I don't care. I just want to be at the party. Because I said to myself, if I get into a long-running show, I'm going to stay. And so I knew this was going to be that. And of course, they gave me a leave of absence to do another show for Jerry a year and change ago. But I made the choice no matter what. You know, things got cut. Things happened. I wanted to be a part of the show. I felt so strongly that it was going to be something special. And I love a long run. I love going to work every day, like being with family and the crew. And I know everybody at the theater. And so I just knew it was going to be what I needed. Success for me is I've made my living as an actor for almost 40 years. I don't have to ask anybody for anything. I have a roof over my head. I have a job to go to. I believe I have the respect of my peers. You'd have to ask them. But I think success is being able to make a living doing what you love to do. And I've been very fortunate. I don't think it's luck because luck implies that I had nothing to do with it. I feel that opportunity is put in front of you and you can succeed or you can fail. So I feel that success is being able to work in this business, period. My notion of success has changed dramatically. I mean, like I said, you know, I was a principal and then my first ensemble was with a group of people who had all created major roles in other shows. And so that shifted my notion of what working meant. And it was also my first Broadway show. And I had just done Search for Signs of Intelligent Life and Universe, which is the biggest thing one person can do. And more people were jazzed by the fact that I was in the ensemble of a Harold Prince show. So I realized that Broadway is a business. It's a machine. And I wanted to be a part of that. And it took me till I was 40 to do that. I'm pretty fortunate in that I never cared what anybody thought about me. And I think that sustained me in my whole life. I never really operated in a way to try to please people. If I could give myself advice back then, I would have studied more. I would have taken more serious acting classes, even though I took a 2-year miser thing when I got out of school, because when I got out of school, I really didn't know anything. The head of the Williamstown Playhouse, I auditioned for his acting class and he put his arm around me and he said, I do not know what to tell you because you do not know how to act. And I thought about it and I said, you're right. I have no idea. It's pure instinct and I have no skills whatsoever. So I went back to class and that was a good thing. So I think everybody has that moment in their life when you can either be crushed by what's happened to you or you can learn from it and move forward. And I've been fortunate enough in those moments in life to stop, regroup and go, okay, where's my part in this? What can I do to make this better? So I think that's sustained me. Absolutely. So I've been able to shift and, you know, I never got married. You know, I was able to go and do what I needed to do or wanted to do. And so I've always been able to adapt myself to whatever is coming in my decades. And who knows what's next?
Special thanks to Adina Alexander for allowing us to reshare her stories this week. The Ensemblist was produced today by Mo Brady, Anna Altide, and me, Jackson Klein. There are two great ways you can be helping The Ensemblist right now. One is by leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. The second is by becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/theensemblist. Please follow The Ensemblist wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that be on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or at our home on Broadway Podcast Network at bpn.fm. You can also follow us on Instagram. Thanks for listening. Until next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.